Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time tonight, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and I think you'll be glad as well, and I hope you make a habit out of it. Make a habit out of enjoying talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. Now, over the past several days, I've gotten several emails that talk about, and this is not unusual. I get a lot of email, and so it's not unusual that I'll get a handful that sort of talk about the same thing. And I've gotten several that talk about how frustrating it is for people, for you, when you talk with your friends about anything paranormal, and then those friends that you talk to just sort of poo-poo anything paranormal, and they say, oh, that's all woo-woo stuff. I'm not interested in that. Well, what I'm about to tell you should encourage you, and it should rock those skeptic friends back on their heels. You think things that are paranormal are just woo-woo? Some of them are. I think it's not that paranormal things are woo-woo. I think some paranormal enthusiasts are woo-woo. But if you think paranormal things are woo-woo, grab you a handful of this. The United States of America is reputed to have the most awesome military on the planet. Now, there are people that would argue that and would say, oh, no, it's some other country. Yeah, okay. But, I mean, you know, these are certainly not this United States military. They're certainly not to be taken lightly by any stretch of the imagination. Well, the largest military base that we have is called Fort Bragg. At Fort Bragg, there has been a sort of a pilot program going on to test something that is paranormal. They call it Samurai Mind Training. They've put several thousand troops through this and have noticed a marked increase in their accuracy of their aim, accuracy of test scores, better performance in their training, much more accuracy, quickness, decisiveness. And some of these troops have been deployed to Iraq and have told that this mind training was phenomenal in the way it helped them to perform and survive in Iraq. It is something called, as I said, the Samurai Mind Training for Modern American Warriors. It's sort of, the program's developer is Sarah Ernst, and she says it's like mental push-ups. And what they do, well, let me just read you a description. There were seven soldiers in a semicircle, lights dimmed, eyes closed, two fingertips lightly pressed beneath their belly buttons to activate their core. If you think paranormal's woo-woo, don't tell these guys. We'll be back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Yeah, like I said, you know, if you think anything that's paranormal is woo-woo, you need to stay away from Fort Bragg. Those guys will take exception to that. My guest this evening is John Ventry. Now, we're doing a series this week, and I told you I'd gotten a number of emails and calls to the show where people were very concerned about 2012. And I've got one. This is one email I got today about 2012, and I printed it out, and you can see it's multi-pages. It is very much on the minds of a lot of people. A lot of people are worried about it. Some people are not really worried. They're curious. Some people think, it's nothing. Nothing's going to happen. It's all malarkey. So, you know, there's the full gamut of opinions and emotions about 2012, but because of the fact that, number one, I've gotten a number of emails regarding 2012 and a number of calls to the show regarding 2012, and then last week, one of the cable channels ran almost nonstop gloom and doom prophecy shows about 2012. I decided, you know, I've had guests on this show that really are, well, they have expertise in the 2012 information. And let's get some of those guests, I decided, to invite them, and let's get those guests to come on and talk to us. Now, each of these guests this week, not all the guests this week will be talking about 2012, but the majority will. And none of these guests are coming to you from an identical perspective. They all come from a different perspective on 2012, a different take on what it's all about. And my guest this evening is, I think, probably very well known to you, John Ventry. John Ventry has been with us before. He is the Pennsylvania and West Virginia State Director for Mutual UFO Network. He is the author of a novel, and this novel is called 12/21/2012, A Prophecy. And in addition to that, he's a very feet-on-the-ground kind of guy. He is the state security director for a very large major corporation. So from that kind of background, we get John Ventry's perspective tonight. John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back on.
Now, John, you wrote a novel about 2012, but in doing a novel about 2012, you quite obviously would have had to have done some research into the information that's out there related to 2012. First of all, kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of the novel, and then let's talk about some of the information you ran across.
Well, you know, what I did was I didn't want to write, I always wanted to write a book on 2012 because I've been hearing about it since I was a little kid, but I didn't want to write a book that talked about the Mayan long count. You know, I thought it was kind of boring to get into the math and that type of deal. So what I did was I researched 2012, and like you said, there are a lot of different perspectives on what may happen. And I took the 2012 theories, I took what I know about ufology from being a state director with the Mutual UFO Network, and I said, you know what, I'm going to make this interesting. I'm going to take 2012, I'm going to take my UFO knowledge, and I'm just going to write a sci-fi novel that's about 90% true based on all these theories and events that have taken place, but I'm going to put it into a storyline. And that's basically what I did, was I wrote a sci-fi story that deals around 2012 and what happens and goes into a lot of those events. And at the end of the book is a UFO ending, the last two chapters, really discussing, it will bring to mind, you know, where did we come from? Is it creation, you know, did God create us? Is it evolution? Or is it intelligent design, meaning that we were genetically engineered, you know, and maybe that's why we change every few thousand years into another species.
Yeah, well, you know, that also brings up the question of not, you know, not just is it creation, did God create us, but it brings up, have we got a proper definition of who is God? Because one of the theories that is out there is that the being that we call God is actually an extraterrestrial, and that we have ascribed to this extraterrestrial some things that may not be accurate, and nevertheless, being an extraterrestrial and having superior technology and having superior knowledge would seem to us to be godlike, and that is one of the theories that's out there. So you know, that it brings all of that up too. Now, John, as you were researching all this stuff about 2012, you were coming at this. I see a lot of people research 2012 from the perspective of, I want to find out what's the exact truth here. What's going to happen? And that's pretty hard to nail down. The actual truth about anything is pretty hard to nail down. Truth is kind of, I've used the expression, and I think this sort of describes it. Truth itself is sort of like, and trying to nail it down is kind of like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall without a bowl. Because truth has so many different facets to it, and our perception of the truth comes into play. And so we may perceive only a very small part of the truth, and it may be much bigger than what we've perceived then. So a lot of people approach this study of 2012, you know, from that standpoint. I want to get to the truth. You approach this from the standpoint of, well, let's see what all of these people are saying, because I want to mix it all together in a storyline. So you had to search through and read through a lot of the different theories about 2012. Let me ask you, did you come to any conclusion for yourself as to what you think 2012 is all about?
Well, you know, you get down to really two alternatives for 2012. One is the cataclysm that's going to take place, and you see that in, you know, the Hopi Indians, different prophecies talking about almost like revelations, end of days type scenario. So it's either going to be a cataclysm, or the New Age type thinkers think that there's going to be the next stage of our evolution, a change in our consciousness, almost like we're going to develop into the next form of human being or intelligence. So it's really those are the two main theories that I've come across: cataclysm, or we're going to go to the next stage. I'd be honest with you, you know, I've learned to go with my gut, and my gut is telling me that there's a cataclysm coming. And, you know, I feel that it's either going to be, a small asteroid strike, you know, nothing that's you know, going to end, you know, it's not going to end the planet, but it's certainly going to change things. Or the other one that really scares me is the super volcanoes that are out there. And as you know, Yellowstone Park is a super volcano, and it's 40,000 years overdue from erupting. It erupts every 600,000 years, and it's 40,000 years overdue.
Let me give you a real nightmare. Let me give you a real nightmare scenario. An asteroid big enough to destroy, say, Los Angeles, comes in and just happens to do a bullseye strike on the Yellowstone supervolcano, and then it explodes.
I was thinking about that, and you know, actually, what I put in the book, and I guess I don't want to give away too much of the story, is that the asteroid actually hits on the other side of the planet. And it, you know, when it hits, it kind of reverberates, and that bulge hits the Yellowstone Park. So it actually hits right on the other side, and the bulge hits Yellowstone and causes it to erupt.
Oh, wow. So you already had that nightmare. A little different version, but you already had that nightmare. Okay, yeah. Now.
But I tell you what, when you look at everything going on, you know, just how negative everything's becoming, from the environment to the economy, it's almost like everything, it's like we're being sucked into this black hole as we get closer and closer to 2012. And, you know, people can say what they want and nothing's going to happen, and 1222, they're just going to go to work, but there's so much of this prophecy that just seems to be falling in place right now. And there are even people who wrote books 10 years ago and said that the economy, you know, the housing was going to collapse, the economy was going to collapse right before 2012, and they hit it right on the head.
Yeah, they did. All right, now I want to read part. I can't read all of this; it's too long. I'm going to read part of this email that I got. Actually, I read it for the first time today. This is from one of our listeners in New Zealand, from Mark, and it says, it starts out with this: 2012. It's all a con job. If anything happens, it won't be due to the natural course of events, but a contrivance. What if the correct date today is not Tuesday, 8th of September, 2009, but Tuesday, 8th of September, 1709? There has been a monumental deception perpetrated for over 1,000 years in order to conceal the truth. The incredibly unpleasant truth of our planet, the incredibly unpleasant truth of our recent past, a little over 1,000 years ago. And they are about to do it all over again. Now, I want to skip to the last page. He goes through and let me tell you, he explains in detail the adjustments that were made to the calendar and how we got to the calendar that we have today, and he explains how and why there are 300 years missing. And then he says, the 2012 Mayan phenomenon is nothing more than a ruse, a means of obscuring a harsh, unpleasant reality, a means by which a man-made and perpetrated atrocity will be explained away as a natural catastrophe, that just so happened to be written in the stars or was foretold long ago by an ancient and insightful people who used to love nothing more than ripping out hearts and body organs with their bare hands while the victims were still alive. Okay, so this is one of the opinions that I've been getting. I've been getting email like this from different perspectives now for the past number of days, maybe past 2 or 3 weeks. And what it shows, first of all, is people are concerned about it. They are thinking about it. But it also, the email shows that there is a very diverse view of this whole 2012 phenomenon. Many, many different views about this phenomenon. Are about this prophecy. All right, now, John, it's not just one prophecy. There's the Mayan prophecy. There's Nostradamus. there are prophecies, or some people say that there are allusions to this in ancient Sumerian text. There are people that say there are allusions to this in ancient Egyptian text. Now, the biblical prophecies, you mentioned that, you mentioned in Revelation, don't give the date of 2012. But not, even though there's no date given, many of the things that you described, the great problems that are all over the face of the earth now, are described in this book, Revelation, as well as in some other books. And so there are a lot of people that think it's on us. What do you think? I've just read to you what this guy says about the calendar being wrong. So what do you think?
Well, you know, I had never heard anything about the calendar being off by 300 years. But one of the items in my book also is when we went to the Gregorian calendar, we lost 11 years and moved New Year's from April 1st to January 1st because it used to be based around, you know, harvest. So I'm thinking to myself, 11 years, well, you know, Y2K, maybe the real Y2K kind of puts you right at 2012 then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the calendar is not 100% correct like this guy is saying, because when we switched to the Gregorian calendar, there were changes in the dates. But you know, the Mayans started with 12/21/2012 and worked backwards. That's why their calendar is 100% correct, because they started with that date because they knew something was going to happen, and they worked their calendar backwards, and that makes it 100% correct.
Yeah, but the problem is, if our calendar is incorrect, we don't know where we are in their calendar.
There's some truth to that. That's 100% correct.
We
have an accurate calendar.
This year might be 2012.
It could be.
Yeah. Or it may be, as some people have told me, 2037, according to our calendar, would be the accurate 2012. I've heard other dates as well. Okay. Let's assume that, just for simplicity, let's assume that our calendar is correct, which we know it isn't, but let's assume it is. That means that we're in 2009. We've got, essentially, we're at the end of 2009. We're coming up toward the end. So we've got 2 years and a little in order to get to December 21st, 2012. After reading everything... I'm sorry?
All right, so you got a little over 3 years.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, 3 years. Yeah, because we have to do 2010, 2011, and then all the way through 2012 to December. Okay, so we got about 3 years and some change. Now, after you've read everything and studied everything, we've got a break coming up, but when we come back from the break, I want to know, after reading and studying everything you read and studied, are you concerned about what's going to be taking place over the next 3 years plus? And what are you doing to get ready for it? We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. All right, welcome back. My guest this evening is John Ventry. And John, before we went to break, I said, after all the stuff you read and researched in order to be able to write this novel, we've got 3 years and some change until 2012. Are you concerned about this? And if so, what plans do you have to be prepared, if possible, for 2012?
Well, you know, I am very concerned about it because, like I said, I got this gut feeling that something's going to happen. I actually took a look at purchasing one of those Nike missile sites that are out here in Pennsylvania where I am, but in this part, they're not for sale. I know other people in other parts of the country have purchased those. It's like Peter Davenport, who runs the New Fork site, purchased a missile silo that I guess he's moved into or has available to himself up in the Seattle area. So, you know, I'm giving that some thought. I do have my survival kit with all my stuff. But, you know, that's all good for about a month or so. But I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think for one minute that it's going to be, you know, an end of the world scenario. I think it could be a small asteroid strike that kind of throws us into that nuclear winter scenario where, you know, crops fail. And like Revelation says, you know, 25% of the population dies, which would be about 1.6 billion people. But, you know, in my book and in my research, I related to Revelations also because of the end time prophecies.
Yeah.
One of the things that comes up with the Antichrist and Revelations is it says that there'll be 7 years of bounty before the rise of the Antichrist. And if you look at, take September 11th, okay, 2001, the 7 years that followed, there was tremendous, you know, build-up in housing prices, stock market. You could almost look at that as the 7 years of bounty from September 11th, 01, to really September of 08 when the market crashed. So I see that as a possible sign. And, you know, then it goes into the Antichrist, which, you know, people don't like to hear this, but Gene Dixon described the Antichrist, and Barack Obama fits that description. You know, and
well, yeah. Look, let me tell you something about that. I have seen some video on YouTube about that, and you know, it's interesting. It is interesting. The problem that you've got is that this Antichrist, as described in Revelation, rises from a reformed or reconstituted Roman Empire, which, of course, the United States of America is not. So I have, from that perspective, see, the whole concept of an Antichrist is in the Bible. It's nowhere else. That's where it is. Okay, and so then if you talk about the Antichrist, then your only data about the Antichrist is in the Bible. There's no more data out there about the Antichrist. That's where it comes from. Okay, and that data precludes it being Barack Obama. So, you know, it's interesting stuff, but it doesn't fit. Unless we find out that he was actually born somewhere in Europe.
Let me tell you what Gene Dixon described 40 years ago.
All right.
He had a vision of Washington, D.C. as a barren wasteland, right, in 2012. That's what she said it will look like in 2012. She had a vision of Queen Nefertiti holding a Muslim baby that she said would grow up to be charismatic, a peace lover at first, and then at 50 years old in 2012 becomes the Antichrist. And there's the coincidence. Our president is 50 years old in 2012. So
I agree. There are some things that she says that match Barack Obama, but he doesn't match the only actual data there is about this term and this figure, Antichrist. The only actual data there is in the Bible, and he doesn't match
it. And John of Patmos.
And where?
John of Patmos wrote that Revelations and was referring to the Roman Empire in a lot of it.
Well, some people say so. I don't get into that. Yeah. That gets into theology. But, you know, it's the thing about it, though, is like if we're talking about Anunnaki, okay, the only data there is about Anunnaki would be in the Sumerian text. So if we talk about Anunnaki, we have to go to the Sumerian text and see what does it say about Anunnaki. Well, the only data in any of the ancient scripts that talk about Antichrist is data that's in the Bible. So if we talk about Antichrist, we have to get our data from there and our definition from there of who is and what is this Antichrist. And he just doesn't fit what it says.
Yeah. Well, I took a lot of these different theories, and there's probably 20 of them, and mm-hmm. you know, you try to blend them all into a storyline. And, you know, that's just one of them that that's out there.
Yeah, it is. And there are people that are absolutely convinced. But, hey, John, you're about the same age I am. You may be a little bit younger. Do you remember that when Richard Nixon was the president, the Secretary of State, I believe, or he might have been Secretary of Defense. No, he was Secretary of State, was Henry Kissinger. And there was a whole big thing going around about Kissinger is the Antichrist. And I've seen this, you know, applied to lots of other people that, you know, this one or that one is the Antichrist. I think when the Antichrist takes over, we'll know who it is. I don't think we'll know who it is until then.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's just one of the theories that's out there.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when you're writing a novel, you can deal with, you can weave that in to the storyline at any point and any way that you want to weave it in to make the story. But here's the thing. A lot of people will hear things and assume, oh, well, you know, like, for instance, I remember seeing and hearing a preacher stand in front of his congregation and say the Antichrist is Henry Kissinger. Okay, and then people believed that and they ran with it. And there are people that will hear all these theories out there. And I tell folks all the time, be careful what you find on the Internet. Be careful. So they hear all these theories. And anyone that's going to tell you this is the Antichrist or that's the Antichrist or that's the Antichrist, just remember the source of any data there is on the Antichrist is the book of Revelation and in the Bible. So anything that doesn't match with that data, then you're not looking at the Antichrist. But, yeah. But it does seem that a lot of people are looking at 2012 as being very much conjoined with the Revelation prophecies, even though Revelation doesn't use the date 2012. I was watching some of these documentaries last week on television, and they weave the whole Mayan 2012 prophecy into and intermingle it with these prophecies out of Revelation. And a lot of people are doing that. Do you think that they are necessarily joined? Is it possible that 2012 will be whatever it is, cataclysms or not, and then the Revelation prophecies might still be out there into the future somewhere? Or do you think they are commingled?
Well, you know, it could go either way. I mean, I think if there is a catastrophe, obviously you're going to apply Revelations to that, saying, look what happened, and if there's a large mass extinction, let's say, let's say, well, Revelation said 25% of the population would be destroyed. And that's why I brought up that 7 years of bounty and then the rise of the Antichrist, because that's all in Revelation. So I think we're going to apply Revelations to whatever the next catastrophe is, because one's coming. And, you know, whether it's 2012 or it's at a future date, we always have either, you know, an influenza outbreak, or, like I said, an asteroid strike or a super volcano. Something always happens. There's been four or five mass extinctions of the human on this planet. You know, the Great Flood actually happened. It's in every civilization has the story of the Great Flood. So whatever happens next, when we get a big one, it's going to be referred to as Revelation.
All right, now let me ask you this. See, Revelation does describe a lot of the things that we it seems to describe a lot of the things that we're seeing happen right now. All right, now, keep that in the back of our minds. There are other prophecies that are not in the Bible. They're, for instance, Nostradamus, Edgar Cayce, Gene Dixon, and other ancient prophecies that also seem to describe the times that we're living in. How is that possible? How is it possible that across the millennia there are these prophets that seem to describe with specificity some of the things we're seeing happen? How is that possible? Let me clarify what I'm asking. People who believe the Bible will say that those prophecies are possible because God spoke to the prophet. Okay. Well, what about Nostradamus? What about the Sumerians? What about Edgar Cayce, Gene Dixon? How is it that they can speak with specificity about some of the things we're seeing happen, and we would assume God spoke to the prophets? Who's talking to these people?
Yeah, I look at people, and, you know, although under the law we're all created equally, no human being's equal. You can't line up any 10 people, 100 people, and tell me they're equal, and I'll find a difference between each of them. Mm-hmm. You know, we use 10%, 8 to 10% of our brain capacity. We only use 3% of our DNA. So maybe special people, you know, they use a little bit more of their brain power, or their DNA is just a little more advanced, and they've got an ability, a psychic ability, that they can see the future.
All right. Now, one of the things that we're hearing about is that as we're approaching 2012, we are astronomically are moving up into what they call the galactic medium. So we're moving through the medium, or equator, if you will, of our galaxy. As the sun moves around the galaxy, it sort of bobs up and down, and it takes all the planets with it, the planets that are in our solar system. So it goes down below the galactic medium, and after many, many thousands of years, it comes back up through the galactic medium, and it just kind of bobs up and down as it moves around the galaxy. So in 2012, we're supposed to be coming through the galactic medium. I have heard from more than one person. I've heard it from some people that would be described as kind of woo-woo. And I've heard it from some people that are definitely not woo-woo, that this is activating some of our DNA that has been inactive. Now, we have to take a break. We're going to step away, and when we come back, that's where we'll pick up. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. John, when we went away for break, I was getting into, you know, how all these different people have told me that as we move through this galactic medium, and they say it's already begun, that many, many people, their extra DNA that we've all heard about it, we've all heard that we have, you know, tons of junk DNA that doesn't appear to have any purpose. Well, I'm hearing that it's getting activated as we move toward that galactic medium, and that as we enter the galactic medium in 2012, it's pretty much all going to be switched on. Now, in your research, did you run across anything like that?
Yeah, actually, I ran across that and that whole cycle that you described. What happens is that our view of the Milky Way galaxy changes 1 degree every 72 years just based on our rotation. So it takes 25,800 years for us to get back to this location that we're going to be in 2012, where on the morning of 12/21/2012, when the sun rises, the Earth's view of the sun rising that morning will be in the exact center plane of the Milky Way galaxy. And that happens every 25,800 years. One of the three Mayan calendars happens to be on a 25,800-year cycle. That's a pretty big coincidence. Something else that happened 25,800 years ago was that the Cro-Magnon replaced Neanderthal. So when you talk about, you know, is something going to change in our DNA, I've heard those same theories about us, that there's going to be either a shift in our consciousness or a change in our DNA. That's why I mentioned that 97% of our DNA is junk. We only use 3%. You know, it seems odd to me that God would only give us 3% of our DNA, unless there's an evolution that takes place that all of a sudden we use 5% or 6%. And like you mentioned, with psychics and people who have ability, maybe they use more of their brain capacity and DNA. But in researching it, there are people, and I'll give you a quick scenario of what they say will happen. There'll be a shift in our consciousness away from materialism, and we'll go to the next level of our potential. It's going to be the end of a male-dominated society that's dependent on government and centered on war. It's going to be like a global wake-up call. And some people will feel that time is speeding up. People will be compelled to perform righteous deeds. People will have dreams and visions that actually come true. They'll hear voices while they're awake, and they'll see angels. And this is all part of that progression that's going to take place. And then there's an evolutionary change in our consciousness and our psychic ability that's going to take place, and people will be like a singularity where everyone is connected psychically. We'll be able to anticipate each other's thoughts and actions, and then people describe those indigo and star children born since 1982 that seem to be very technologically savvy. They question authority, they seem to have higher IQs, and what they'll start to do is refuse to support the government, refuse to pay taxes, and refuse to enlist in the military. And that's some of the descriptions of what you're talking about that I've researched.
You know, I've run into that, as all of that information as well. You know what I wonder, John? How can we, at this level of development, where we are, as you say, we use about 3% of our DNA and about 10% of our brain, how is it that we can know for sure what the next level is really going to be like? You know, I think all of that is it may come true, but I think it is more wishful thinking and dreaming about what it might be than it is actual information. I don't think we've got any information about what it's all going to be. In fact, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say it's only conjecture. Obviously, I think what you got to look at is the fact that we use 8 to 10% of our brain capacity and 3% of our DNA. But we have the potential. If we're only using 3% of our DNA, we have the potential to be so much more than what we are. And if we ever used 100%, we'd probably be godlike.
Well, of course, we've been talking about, you know, the biblical prophecies being intermingled with the 2012 prophecies, and a whole lot of the people that are talking and writing about 2012 are writing and saying things that are commingled with those biblical prophecies. Okay, so let's take that as a possibility. That being a possibility, there is, not in Revelation, but another book in the New Testament. I honestly can't remember which book. I think it's in one of the epistles of John, but I'm not sure about that. But it says, you know, they all of the biblical stuff about the end of time hinges everything on the return of Jesus. And it says, it does not yet appear what we shall be, but when we see him, we will be like him. Whatever it is what we're going to become. Okay? And so that's kind of what you're describing, that, you know, it's conjecture as to what all that might be, but it's a step up. Now, a lot of people... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that we could take a step backwards if you look at the history of the human species, so it's got to be a step up.
Well, if the biblical prophecies are correct, it's whatever it is that he is what we are about to step into. That if those biblical prophecies are correct, it says that. All right, now, having said that, people say we will no longer be warlike, but those biblical prophecies say he comes back here and wages one whale of a war. So, are we going to be tremendously warlike?
I'm not in agreement with the New Age thinkers, like that whole passage I just read you, that we're going to enter this... next step of evolution, and maybe there will be some sort of evolutionary change, but my research and my feeling of 2012 is a catastrophe. It's not an evolutionary jump. One of the other things I wanted to mention that happened 25,800 years ago that coincides with this whole cycle of being in the center plane and the Mayan calendar is 25,800 years ago was the start of the Ice Age, which also was the end of Neanderthal and the start and the rise of Cro-Magnon. So that whole Mayan is an amazing culture that they had, that they were able to make all these predictions, going back almost 2,000 years ago, and be correct with so many of them.
Yeah, and the fact that they had it all figured out to 25,800 years, how did they know about this wobble in the Earth's axis and to what degree and how many years it took? That's pretty interesting. All right. We're about a minute and a half away from our next break. And we're going to continue talking after we come back from that break for a few minutes, and then we'll open up the telephone lines. But one of the things I want to talk about here is the possibility, because of your involvement with UFO investigation, the possibility that there was extraterrestrial involvement and perhaps intervention 25,800 years ago, and the possibility that that is coming again in 2012. And the reason I want to do that is because that falls into sort of the prophecies from Sumeria, and they say the Anunnaki are coming back. The Christians say Jesus is coming back, and I get asked, "Is Jesus Anunnaki?" Well, I don't know, but we will sort of dive off into that when we get back from this next break. John, do you have a website that you would like to give us the address to?
Yeah, very simply, it's my name. It's www.johnventry.com. That's V like in Victor, ENTRE, www.johnventry.com. That's where you'll find my book. You'll find the UFO conferences we got coming up next month in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania. We have a conference in the...
Okay, John, we have to step away. The break has taken over, and the mics will go dead. We'll be back. Thank you. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you who are just now joining us in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're continuing in our series this week about 2012 and the end of time. John, you said that, well, we'll come back to that. I want to continue for a moment on this whole thing about, you know, is Jesus an Anunnaki? Because I do get asked that. And then if, you know, if I say, well, you know, he could be, then I get email telling me, well, of course he's not, he's God. Or of course he's not, he's Elohim. Well, look, there's differences in language. And there is no such word as Elohim in Sumerian. Their word for these beings that came to this earth is Anunnaki. There is no word God in Arabic. It is Allah. And if you take an Arabic translation of the New Testament and look up John 3:16, it will say, for Allah so loved the world, because that's the word in their language. So there are language differences. So what do you think? Do you think that maybe the Sumerian story kind of had things right? And that some, they called them gods, came here and intervened and created what we are? Or do you think it's that's not correct?
Well, you know, I found some of that also in my research. And here's a tidbit that I'm not sure that you're aware of. You might be. But the Mayan culture, their sacred text is called the Popovu. And it tells a story of extraterrestrials coming to Earth, creating a perfect human species, then destroying it, replacing it with a more kind of dumbed-down version. And it's extremely similar to the Sumerian tablets that were written, I guess that's 8,000 years ago. The Mayan story was written about 1,500 years ago. So maybe they heard it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't supposed to have contact. You know, if you listen, talk to archaeologists, they wouldn't have had contact with the Sumerians, because Sumeria was 10,000 miles away. But the Mayans tell a similar story to what the Sumerian scrolls talk about. And, you know, if you look at what happened with Cortez and how, you know, any primitive society that encounters a more advanced one, right away they worship them and believe that they're gods. But the Hopi Indians, you know, in the United States, have a similar story, and they mention, actually, the Hopi Indians mention 2012 and say that the earth will be shaken by an explosion. But they go into the sake, then they talk about the sacred ones will arrive via a flying shield, which is very similar to the Book of Enoch that talks about the flying wheel, which is similar to Roman writings that talk about the fiery shield that flew across the sky. And then the Hopis perform a Kachina dance where they wear an outfit that looks like a spacesuit, you know, with a helmet on it. So, you know, there's a huge coincidence there to was there extraterrestrial contact, you know, what the Mayans, the Hopi Indians described, the Romans, and possibly even, well, the Sumerians, definitely. And Michael Tellinger wrote a great book called Slave Species of God that goes into the whole Sumerian text and the story, similar to Zachariah Sitchin, of how we were created. And, you know, I'll tell you what, it's very interesting.
All right, now, you, because you are the state director for Pennsylvania and West Virginia with MUFON, let me ask you this. As we are approaching 2012, as we're getting closer, are we seeing an increase in UFO reports?
Yeah, the answer is yes, and it actually started last summer. UFO reports around the world doubled, starting with, I'd say, middle of June, beginning of July. The number of reports around the world doubled. As a matter of fact, in Pennsylvania, They went up probably 3 to 4 times as many as they were the year before. We've just had a wave of UFO sightings across Pennsylvania that's still continuing. We had 97 reports 2 years ago. Over the past 12 months, from last July, let's say, to this July, we've had 350 UFO reports. So there is an increase in UFO sightings around the world and in Pennsylvania.
Okay, do you see any linkage between those UFO, the uptick in UFO reports, and the approach of 2012?
Well, you know, that all falls into these same prophecies that some people say that there will be contact at that point. As a matter of fact, the Tibetan monks recently, I think it was less than a year ago, came out and said that there will be extraterrestrial contact, and they will intervene in this planet to save it, because they believe that there's going to be a nuclear war between China, India, and Russia over natural resources. And the Tibetan monks believe that the extraterrestrials will intervene and not allow the human race to destroy the planet. So there's a lot of that out there, that there's a connection there between, you know, UFOs and 2012, with the Hopi Indians, the Mayans, the Tibetans, I Ching. It's amazing how many cultures talk about this. And now all of a sudden, I guess it's a coincidence, you see a large increase in UFO reports around the world.
Have you given any consideration to what a real mothership might look like and what dimensions it might have?
Well, you know, one of the things that comes up, people say, well, they can't get here from there. And I heard someone give a real good scenario that, take a, you know, the ships that fly, like the UFOs, the flying saucers, are very different than the mothership. And the example that was given was, take an aircraft carrier. You have you have nuclear aircraft carriers, let's say the Ronald Reagan. It can go 18 years before refueling the aircraft carrier. Yet the fighter planes are not nuclear fighter planes. They probably fly for 3 or 4 hours and have to refuel. So the mothership, if you look at the aircraft carrier scenario and the fighter jets, the mothership and the UFOs are totally different, you know, as far as how, whatever it takes to get here from wherever they come from, and whatever the UFOs use to fly short distances are totally different. So, you know, I don't know how big a mothership is. You know, everything I would say about that would be a guess. But I thought it was real interesting that, you know, we assume that if they are coming from a great distance, that it's all these little UFOs flying. And then I heard this one person say, well, wait a minute, it could be like an aircraft carrier. That's totally different than the UFO that flies and, you know, maybe comes down and visits.
The reason I asked is because, you know, we're looking at ancient prophecies. All of the data we have about anything to do with this 2012 thing is from ancient civilizations, whether it's Mayan or Hopi or the Tibetan monks or the Sumerians or the Bible. It's all from ancient civilizations. If we had no exposure to those ancient writings, we would not even be thinking about 2012. That's where the information comes from. And
correct. Yeah.
In one of those, and this will surprise a lot of people, there is described the landing of a gigantic mothership that is 1,400 miles by 1,400 miles by 1,400 miles, either a cube or possibly a pyramid. That's big.
That's almost too big to land, 1,400 by 1,400.
Yeah. And that's in the book of Revelation. And
that would be about half the size of the United States.
It's big.
Yeah.
It's big. It would certainly have its own gravitational interaction with the planet, I would think.
Yeah.
So if that's true, we, you know, you mix that with these other prophecies having to do with you know, the return of extraterrestrials, you know, it seems to be in Revelation as well. And here's my question. Does anybody have any information in the stuff that you read? Does anybody have any information as to why these extraterrestrials would even give a flip whether this planet makes it or not and whether we make it or not?
Well, you know, you look at this planet and just the way the composition of it, you know, it's a dense planet. It's hugely rich in natural resources. You know, the other planets in the solar system really aren't. So it's a jewel of the solar system. So whether they're interested in this planet because of its natural resources or they terraformed it and created us, which some people think that we're just in a genetic experiment, and they come back every 25,800 years and kind of up us to the next level, you know, that's a possibility also.
Yeah, I cannot imagine. I mean, I'm not without compassion, and yet I go walking out through the yard, and I'm sure I step on bugs and never even notice it, and I don't really care if I do. I would think if they are this far advanced ahead of us, that they would look at us kind of like we look at bugs, you know?
A lot of people have said that. It's like you don't go in your yard and try to communicate with the squirrel or the anthill, and if they're a billion years ahead of us, they might not make any attempt to communicate or care what you think.
Yeah.
You know, I would think that, you know, you would look at a planet, and if you look at it at night, you know, there are huge areas lit up. Obviously, you could see that there's civilization and construction, and they would obviously take note of that. But, you know, I don't think for one minute that if there are UFOs and extraterrestrials, I don't think they're here to hurt us. I think they just observe us. You know, if they wanted to take us at any time, they could have. You know, There's no sense even waiting for us to have more advanced nuclear technology. You know, I think it's, I won't say safari, but maybe a scientific mission to just observe us. Star Trek in reverse. They're just watching us and observing how we deal with diversity and different problems that we have.
Okay, we're going to open the phone lines and allow people to call in. If you've got a question or a comment, maybe you think John is right on target here and you want to say so, okay. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Or maybe you think he's way off target, and maybe you think I'm way off target. Same telephone number, 623-444-5889. Or the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. That's toll-free. Now, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message, and you do that by going over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down, and you'll see a link that says flash message, and just click that, and you can send me a flash message. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario. Hello there, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello, John. John, I've been following a lot of this 2012 thing and the things leading up to it, and I've seen that the governments across, at least here in North America, have been preparing for this for a long time. Obviously, somebody way up, really knows what's really going on, because we see the building of all these underground bases, and there is no denying that they exist. They do these underground bases everywhere, and all these concentration camps that have been built all throughout North America, and some of these places are fit only to save the what some have called them the elite of the planet in case something happens, and that this whole that some of these people that are in power may also be trying to make it so that only they will be the ones that survive come 2012. Have you come to any conclusions similar to that?
Absolutely, and that's even in my book. There's a group out there. We've built 1,400 seed banks around the world to store different grains. It's called the Global Diversity Group. I've got it somewhere in here in my notes. But we're building these seed banks all around the world. They're at 300 feet above sea level. They're kept at -1 degree to keep seeds for 1,000 years. We also have 129 deep underground military bases, and the acronym for that is DUM, D-U-M-B, for deep underground military bases. But and then people, and there's a tunnel system that connects these, and that's that hum that people hear. I get a lot of calls from people asking about this, like the Taos hum in New Mexico. That's the drilling and everything that's taking place under the ground right now. But that whole scenario is in my book. But I agree with you. I mean, who would they take? You know, it's like that movie Deep Impact. You know, they pick certain people. Is it going to be a random lottery? I doubt it. I would think it would be like a bunch of military people, maybe everybody in the FBI, you know, some of our elite scientists, those type of people. I don't think it's going to be just a random lottery where Joe the Plumber gets to go. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I was going to allude to something else, but I actually forgot what I was going to say. Anyhow, thank you very much, and I'll see you later, Kev.
All right, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. We have here a flash message from Scotland. This is from Mike in Scotland, and he says he apologizes. It's 3:35 a.m., and he's got to listen to the rest of the show later, but he's got a question. He says, the most likely scenario for 2012 is the magnetic pole shift. We are well overdue for a reversal in the Earth's magnetic poles. It has happened many times before. The South Atlantic anomaly, which is an area the size of the United States, has already shifted. Planes, ships, etc. stay well clear of this area. If the poles completely shift, then it will cause the seasons to change and many unnatural effects on the planet. If anything is going to happen in 2012, then I think it will be a complete magnetic pole shift. Remember, we're overdue for a pole shift, and this is according to top scientists. Okay, what about that? Is 2012 going to be a pole shift?
Yeah, he's right on the money. I mean, that's I probably got about 15, 20 different theories with 2012, but that's one of them. They speak of the magnetic poles reversing. Right now, the poles are weakening. That's a scientific fact that the poles are weakening. They've reversed in the past, and the geologists know that from the stratum of the rocks. They know that the poles have reversed in the past. No one's actually explained how that's happened. But one of the theories is that with the weakening of the magnetic poles, it's going to that would affect our brain waves and change who we are. One of the things that would happen also is any reversal of the poles would wreck all of our electronics, satellite communications, etc. The magnetic fields is another area that's talked about in relation to that, because our magnetic fields reflect radiation, and any weakening, and that's weakening also, and a weakening of the magnetic fields increases the greenhouse effect, melts the poles, and causes some of the severe climate change that we're seeing and that other people predict. So the call is right on. That's another one of the theories that's out there.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. I just wondering, with the say that, we talk about these guys being so advanced that, they would look at us like anthills or something. But I would hope to think, you know, we kill, say one wasp nest or bee's nest off of our garage, but we do know what the problem would be if we would kill, hundreds of thousands of them. You know, we're conscious of that fact. We're not conscious of that fact on all levels. You know, all insects and everything seems to have a purpose and a meaning. And if you upset that cart, you upset the whole apple, the whole thing. So, I would think that they would have, a more common understanding that, that they just wouldn't think of us as nothing, once we get that far advanced.
Here's the thing. The thing is that we are the consumers of the entire rest of the food chain.
Okay.
And all of the rest of the food chain is dependent upon the rest of the food chain. None of them are dependent upon us.
This is true. But, I guess in some ways we perpetrate the life for them. I suppose we probably destroy more than we help, but,
Well, we are not the primary food source for any other species. And if we're gone, they'll all do just fine.
I don't know if you've seen that movie about the day, like a day after.
After man is gone.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. What would happen?
Mm-hmm.
It would actually, if we disappeared with our machineries and the stuff we got on this planet, it would actually destroy this planet.
I don't think it would.
There's proof that there would be, because our reactors would go crazy and our cities would burn and all kinds of things that you can't imagine.
Yeah, okay, listen, John, you go ahead and respond and then I'll respond.
Okay.
I guess the only thing that would be left, because when you look at modern construction compared to how we used to build things 2,000 years ago, the only thing that would be left would be Mount Rushmore. That's the only thing that would last that we've built in the last 500 years that wouldn't decay after 500 years. But the one thing I want to interject back here when you talk about these extraterrestrials and how they observe us. When you first opened up the show, Kevin, you mentioned almost the scenario of a false flag. You have to be careful. Would it be the government controlling us with a false flag scenario, making us think that something's going on in 2012 when it's nothing more than a hologram in the sky? Or maybe we built our own UFO that we could fly by, that everybody can see it, and then they give us something like the cure for HIV, and then they tell us something they want us to do, and it's nothing more than the government controlling us and enacting a scenario. And we think it's extraterrestrial, then it's going to happen, in 2012. That's a scenario also that is very likely.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back after this with more of your calls and talk about 2012 and the end times. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll-free at 888-223-4599. My guest is John Ventry, and he is a lot of things. He is a director of security for a major corporation. He is the state director for Pennsylvania and West Virginia for the Mutual UFO Network, and he is the author of 12/21/2012, A Prophecy. It's a novel based on his research of all of these various 2012 scenarios. When we went away for break, you were mentioning that one of the possible scenarios that's out there is that it'll be a false flag operation. And that is what is sort of alluded to here in this email that I read at the beginning of the show from our listener, Mark, in New Zealand. He doesn't say false flag. He said it'll be a contrivance. And there are people who say, and I run into these, John, who say our government would not pull such a false flag operation, that we don't do that. Well, they need to go look at some documentaries that have been done that document with actual declassified CIA documents that they have done false flags, and even use that terminology in their memos. So, it is a possible scenario. John, how likely do you think it is to be that?
Well, you know, it was our Navy that created the term false flag when we put the colors of another ship up on our ship and used that as a false flag. And that's where the term comes from. But, you know, it's another possibility. And I've actually sat back and thought about that, and I'm writing a new book, and I've put that whole false flag scenario in there. It's very possible. And like I said, you know, they'll use a hologram, or we may already have a UFO that's back engineered or just created, you know, by our military. But the interesting thing is, what would we want from everybody? You know, we'll give you something that from the extraterrestrials, which is actually us. Here's a gift, but now we want the human race to do something. You know.
What's the price?
Question. How? Yeah, because you know, in a scenario like that takes maybe 3 hours or 3 days, you would accomplish as much as Jesus did in the 3 years that he preached. You know, in the Middle East, it was a 3-year campaign. You could do that with a good false flag operation in a matter of days.
Okay. Now, let's back up a little bit, and because we're talking about this false flag scenario that's out there, and we're talking about it as if that's something they might do between now and 2012, or maybe on 2012. So we're talking about it in terms of it being a future event. Let me ask you, how likely do you think it is that this tremendous uptick in UFO sightings that you told us about, how likely is it that that is false flag?
It very well could be, because we know from the Mutual UFO Network that the only real unidentified flying objects, and that doesn't mean that they're UFOs, it's only, you know, 5 to 7% of all the sightings. And in my opinion, I think it's a lot less than that when you can really apply the science and do all the research. Most of them we explain. You know, it's a misidentification, it's a, you know, an asteroid, it's nothing but a helicopter, it's something. We explain somewhere between 93 and 95% of the sightings. So the real unidentifies, you're down to just a few percentage of what's seen. So, you know, would that be part of the scenario? You start having an uptick in sightings, you have Britain and France and China and Brazil open up their UFO files, you got everybody thinking about this. You know, it's a big psychological game. Well, that's where you would start, is bring the UFO phenomenon more to light. Look at the movies that are out, etc. You've got that Fourth Kind movie coming out, I think, in November. Looks real interesting. But that would be part of the scenario, the path that you would be led down.
Well, yes, but I think it's interesting, too, that for all these years, people have been screaming and crying and scratching and clawing to get the government to disclose. And now, as disclosure is beginning to happen in other nations, the very same group that's been screaming for disclosure is now looking with suspicion upon disclosure.
It is interesting, because how would you ever really know the truth? You know, it's so easy to manipulate. Even the disclosure that's taking place, how do you know they're giving you the best cases? We know from Project Blue Book, the best cases were left out of the study. The ones that they knew were real UFOs were very hard to explain were left out of the study.
Yeah.
So what they're feeding us right now, how do we know that's their best cases? So, you know, until you make a physical contact, you know, that everybody can verify, and I guess that's what the scientists really ask for, you don't know you got it until you actually got it.
Yeah. Okay, we have a flash message out of the United Kingdom. This is John writing, and he wants to know, what is your take on the last pope being the Antichrist, the one after this one? In other words, the next pope after this one being the Antichrist. What's your take on that? And what's your take on the numbers 1111, and does this all tie in with 2012?
Okay, well, that's in my book also. That was the Father Malachi Omor Gare, who in 1124 wrote the papal prophecy, and he said that there would be 266 popes. And this is just another one of those huge coincidences, if you think it's all coincidence. In 1124, he says there's going to be 266 popes. Well, Benedict is number 265. So of the 266 popes, Benedict is 265. I don't know how old he is, but he's got to be about 80. And the prophecy is that the 266th pope will be named Peter, and he won't be the Antichrist, but it would start the end of days with the naming of the 266th pope. I'm not sure what the 1111 is, but 1212 comes to mind, and I've been waiting for an opportunity to bring this up. In the Bible Code by Michael Drosnin, where they took the Bible and some other books, War and Peace, etc., Gone with the Wind, they found 50 prophecies in the Bible that came true. But when they put the year 2012 in the computer program with the Bible, it comes up with, next to 2012, the words Earth Annihilated. And that's in Deuteronomy 12:12, which is interesting, 12:21-2012, says that the Bible, only God could have written the Bible, and it was sealed before God, because it's a cryptogram that tells you what's going to happen. The future's already written in the Bible. And Sir Isaac Newton, and I don't think a lot of people know this, he spent more than half his life trying to decipher the Bible, because he felt the same way, that everything we needed to know was already in the Bible, because it was a cryptogram. We just had to figure it out. I'm not sure what 1111 stands for, if you know, Kevin, but the 1212 brought to mind Deuteronomy in 12:21-12, that the Bible was sealed before God and the future is written in it.
Isaac Newton, in fact, did believe that, and he kept trying to... He believed there was a code written into the Bible. And he kept trying to discover that code. Spent, as you said, a great portion of his time working on that. I don't know what to think about the Bible code. What do you think about that? Is that is that good science, the Bible code?
Well, you know, I think it was the Navy. I'm not sure who wrote the computer program to look at it, and they were very skeptical that you'd find anything in the Bible, and there were over 50 predictions in the Bible that were true. And in those other books that had the similar number of words, there was only one. And, you know, that could be just, they said, your average coincidence. You'd hit one in any, you know, great novel that has a lot of pages. But the Bible had over 50 predictions that actually came true once they ran the computer code. So that's interesting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the whole God theory is the truth, and that the Bible does have the future written in it. And I guess we'll know when we die. But I'm open to all the possibilities. I don't discount anything. And if you can show me, you know, that computer program that's in the Bible code, and it adds up, and you got 50, 60 prophecies, well, then there's something to the Bible that's different than any other book.
Fair enough. I think that program was written by a rabbi or a team of rabbis. I've seen a documentary on that, but I don't remember all the details.
Hey, let me mention something else, since you mentioned documentary, and you brought this up earlier. You brought up Nostradamus.
Yeah.
And in all of, and that was on one of those shows that you were talking about recently. They talked about the lost book of Nostradamus.
Mm-hmm.
In all the research I did up until 2 years ago, let's say, Nostradamus did not have one prediction about 2012. He said that the earth, that the world would be destroyed in, I think, the year 3700 and something, and we would have 1,000 years of peace after a great conflict. I couldn't find one prediction from Nostradamus on 2012, but yet that TV show said they found the lost book of Nostradamus referring to 2012, and I'm really skeptical about that.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting to me, we've been talking here tonight about whether or not the... 2012 prophecies and the Book of Revelation prophecies are commingled, whether they should be commingled. We've talked about that. And what's interesting is if you read Revelation, first of all, you want to make sure that you don't do it on a really dark night. It is frightening. But if you read Revelation, it's got all the elements that all of these various other scenarios present, all wrapped into one. You have false flag. You've got a heavenly body that strikes the earth. I don't know whether it's a comet or an asteroid. It strikes the earth. You've got all kinds of plagues turned loose on the earth. You've got this new world order, one world government. Everything that we're talking about that's in these various other scenarios is in Revelation, as well as stepping up in consciousness for some. And then the interesting thing is you're talking about this Deuteronomy 12:12, where it says in the Bible code, earth annihilated. Okay. Well, the end of all of that Revelation stuff is we go to a new heaven and a new earth, a new galaxy. Wow. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach. That means we only have a few minutes left. If you are going to call, now is the time to call. The telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll-free at 888-223-4599. John, I think it's important, really, because we've talked a whole lot tonight. Not exclusively about the Bible, but we have brought it into things as we've talked about it tonight. I need to underscore again, if you're going to talk about 2012, if you're going to talk about the origin of the human species, if you're going to talk about possible end of time, all of the data comes from ancient civilizations, it comes from ancient writings. And it would be absolutely, it would violate the integrity of research if you simply say, oh, well, that's the Bible, and toss it out. Because it also talks about these things, and you have to look at them too. And I think it's important that we kind of underscore that fact. Ancient Indian writings talk about these things. Ancient Sumerian writings, ancient Egyptian writings, ancient Mayan, etc. And if, you know, if you're going to look at the data, you've got to look at all the data. It's pretty interesting. But I do find, you know, this thing that you're talking about, Earth Annihilated, I find that pretty interesting because it lines up with something that is said in Revelation, as well as some other places. And that is that, you know, the things we see out there in the sky, we call that the heavens. It'll pass away. The earth will pass away. And in Revelation, it says we will go to a new heavens and new earth. So, you know, there, if that happens, you're talking about moving to a new planet in a different galaxy. Are you still with me, John?
Yeah. I mean, that's... I agree with you 100% that the Bible, other than what they found in the Bible code, that was the only reference to 2012. That, you know, the Bible does not say 2012 other than the Bible code, but you take the scenario of Revelations and say, well, that can't apply to whatever is going to come up. But you're 100% correct. The 2012 prophecies are all ancient prophecies. But it's really interesting as to how did they get all of this knowledge, and how could they be so right in so many of the scenarios and things that went on in their cultures when they were caves, they were almost cave people at one minute, Stone Age people, and then all of a sudden they're building expansion bridges, doing brain surgery, and creating calendars and astronomy that's more accurate than what we have right now. How does that happen?
Well, yeah, and, you know, this brings up what's called the ancient astronaut theory, that there were extraterrestrials who visited our ancestors. Maybe they did. And, you know, someone brought them that extra knowledge. All right, very quickly, we've got a couple of flash messages here. This one from Mexico, from Humberto. And Juan... And I can't pronounce the last name. Yadun has an amazing discovery in Tonina, Chiapas. He is responsible for the archaeological zone near Ocosingo. It's all about the black hole in the center of the galaxy and 2012. I was with him a few months ago. And he was in the process of publishing his work. Maybe it could be interesting to contact him. He is an authority in Mayan culture with an international level. I have some images of his discovery. Best regards. Well, I would love to see those images. And I would be very interested in knowing about his discovery. Okay.
You know what's interesting with that, Kevin? Is that the Mayans in their prophecy talk about a dark rift in the center of the galaxy, and then in 1993 we discovered that there's a black hole in the center of the galaxy. Just another one of those coincidences that they happened to get right 1,500 years ago.
Yeah, well, I don't see any other explanation for how these ancient people knew such astronomical data. And could calculate things that we would think they wouldn't even know about. For instance, the precession of the Earth. That 1 degree every 72 years. How would they even know that? Someone had to tell them. They didn't discover that on their own. Someone educated them.
I agree.
You know. One of the interesting things from the work of Zechariah Sitchin is that the Sumerians knew about all of our planets all the way out, including Pluto, which scientists now say is not a planet. And they knew about that. How did they know about Pluto? Well, they never observed it. On the clearest night in the history of this universe, with the most powerful binoculars, you will never, ever see Pluto. And they didn't have binoculars. Pluto was not discovered until 1930 with a pretty massive telescope, and then it was just barely a fuzzy little smudge on the film. But they knew about it. How did they know? I think, you know, again, the evidence says that someone who did know about it told them, taught them about it. They never saw it. They never observed it. There's no one living on planet Earth today who has ever seen Pluto unless they looked through the lens of a really major telescope, observatory class telescope. There's no one that has ever seen Pluto except for astronomers looking through observatory telescopes. Amateur astronomers with backyard telescopes have never seen Pluto, and the Sumerians didn't have even those telescopes. So somebody had to tell them. John, it's been very, very interesting talking with you this evening about 2012. And I would recommend, folks, that you get John's book. It takes a lot of these different theories and weaves them together into a sci-fi plot. And it's pretty exciting reading, and I recommend that you get it. Tell us again, John, where they can go to get your book.
Yeah, you can just go to my website, www.johnventry.com. It's also on Amazon.com, and it's at the publisher, who's rosedogbooks.com, rosedogbooks.com. So any one of those locations. And I would like to just plug my conference for next month.
Yeah,
we
go ahead.
We have some really good speakers. We have October 9th and 10th in the Philadelphia area, October 17th in the Pittsburgh area. We have Dr. David Jacobs talking about abductions. We have Father Barry Downing talking about the Bible and UFOs. That should be a really interesting discussion. We've got, I give my 2012 talk. I give my, at the other conference, I'll talk about the UFO wave over Pennsylvania that occurred last year. We've got Rosemary Ellen Guiley talking about shadow people that could be aliens. Just a whole host of, we're talking about UFOs underwater UFOs under the ocean. So go to my site, johnventry.com. You'll see the agendas. If you're going to be anywhere in Pennsylvania, we've got a conference in Pittsburgh and a conference in Philly, and it's very well attended, and I don't charge a lot of money to get in.
Okay, John, we're out of time. Stay on the line with me for just a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. We've got more great shows coming all week long, so you don't want to miss any of them. Tell all your friends, your family, and even your enemies. All right. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.